Strantz. What's going on?
I'm still marveling at Sasha Barkov.
Yeah.
I'm totally honest with
you. That was pretty good.
What a play. I mean, I thought that game was, like, interestingly enough, games 4 and 5 of that series actually got really good.
Mm-hmm.
After the first three games felt like a coronation more than a conference final.
It was the inverse or the reverse of the Leaf series. Where
right,
the beginning
that's right.
was interesting, and then it was like, oh no, Florida's way better. And this one at the beginning was like, oh, Florida's way better. And then it got a little interesting, but the result was the same.
Yeah, and the... So, I mean, Svechnikov did not have a run that covered himself in glory for the Carolina Hurricanes all told. I'm still a big fan. I mean, he's a massive human being. He's still young. Like, he's still 25-ish. Yeah, I mean, he's in his prime. And we're sort of out of excuse territory, and I just don't know if he's a star player, right? He's got one 30-goal season in his career,
mm-hmm.
right? But I still think there's something there, even if it's not elite. And that forechecking sequence where he, you know, really got after Gustav Forsling down low, forced the best puck moving D into a poor error, and then also deflected the puck to Seth Jarvis, and then the stones on Seth Jarvis to try a chip shot over Bobrovsky in that situation was incredible. I mean, just a really gutsy, big brass ones goal to tie that third period up. But man, that Barkov sequence down low, working against, who was it, Orlov, and then just like, I mean, that was, you know what that was? That was the promise of Barkov. That was, what if we took a guy with Pavel Datsyuk's hands and put him in a guy with David Backes' body? Would that be fun?
That's,
and it's like, yes. The answer is yes.
That's why big, strong centers with puck skills are, you go top three in the draft, right?
Well, but there's puck skills and there's Barkov.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right?
Because that pass, I mean, how do you even think to do that? So many, like, how do you even think to try just a crisp cross crease feed in that situation with the whole world collapsing on you? Brilliant, just brilliant stuff. And then I loved the, you know, Carter Verhaeghe, maybe not the sharpest tool, but just like watching Barkov behind the net and then being like, oh, and like taking that 2 steps into the quiet ice to finish that. That was awesome. Like, just that's such good goal scoring instincts from Verhaeghe, who scores another series winner. Didn't love how Carolina played the end game. I don't understand why they didn't go 6-on-4 to start that late power play after the pretty soft call on Sam. Mm-hmm. Sam Bennett finally gets a soft call. It's like all the reasons to penalize Sam Bennett, and finally, with 3 minutes left, there's like
they
a non-slash.
Yep.
And they're like, ah, can't do that.
Guess we got to call this one.
And it's like that's what you called? Sam Bennett must have just been like, wow.
I finally found the line, apparently.
That's flat out like Al Capone going to jail for tax evasion. You know what
Gotta
I mean?
Get him for something.
Who brought it up on our show? The firm line? Like, yeah, it's got teeth. That's that. Kevin Woodley did. Anyway, so I didn't like how Carolina, and I also felt like their players weren't conscious enough of the penalty expiring as Sam Bennett sort of put the game away. So didn't love that. Feel like it wasn't Rod Brind'Amour's greatest series.
Brind'Amour seemed rattled all series to
me.
You just think of what we've heard from him publicly. And I mean, even during the game, the interview of Emily Kaplan on the bench, or not Emily Kaplan, sorry, it was Jackie Redmond on the bench yesterday, where he's saying those aren't real penalties, right? And that's pretty forceful for an NHL coach mid-game in a conference finals game. After the game, some of the commentary he had about what he thought of his own team going into the year, which is totally fair, but again, it's just a little bit more unvarnished than I think we're used to hearing from coaches, and he never really seemed comfortable in this series, much like his team.
Yeah.
Didn't seem comfortable until games 4 and 5 at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So, and then you factor in the bizarre Paul Maurice thing last night too, after the game, in the handshake line. Just overall, I would say he just didn't seem like he was in a great headspace.
No.
Rod Brind'Amour. Didn't seem like he was on top of his game.
I would say don't ignore how exhausting, like, you know, not unlike what we've dealt with in Vancouver across the last year. Like, don't, there are seasons that are a breeze that go
right
by quickly, and there are seasons that are a movie in and of themselves. They're not really a movie, they're a season, but nonetheless. And I think the Hurricanes had one of those years. And I think the Rantanen thing, you know, like, from what I understand, I think it was a little more complicated behind the scenes than people realize in terms of Carolina making the determination that this wasn't a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think all of that, the changing nature of the team, I wonder if it just wore them down. They definitely didn't have the horses. Like, they did not have the horses. Brent Burns looked 40. Dmitry Orlov looked like the captain of SKA St. Petersburg. And I don't even know if that's a team, by the way.
I think it is.
Is there a St. Petersburg Army team? I don't know. And then,
yeah, SKA St. Petersburg is a team.
Good.
I don't know if they say SKA or if they say SKA.
Oh, SKA.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, man. No, that's fine. SKA's not the problem. And then I just wasn't sure if there was. Anyway. And then, who else is in the top four? Shane Gostisbehere,
yeah.
Specialized power play guy. Pretty impressive, honestly, that they made it as far as they did, given their lack of horses. They've got a lot of work to do to upgrade this roster significantly. The gap between them and the Panthers, much like the gap between the Panthers and the Maple Leafs, much like the gap between the Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning, all teams, by the way, that I think are like, well, not the Leafs, but I think the Lightning and the Carolina Hurricanes are legitimately like top six or seven teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have put them on a list of inner circle contenders going into the playoffs. I wouldn't have put the Leafs there. And, you know, that's just a sign of like how big the gap is. We're seeing it in the West too, honestly. I mean,
that's the storyline right now. We're going to frame it as the rematch, but the other way of looking at it is the gap those two teams have created in their respective conferences.
Well, because like, I mean, I think LA was a top seven or eight team in the league too this year. I definitely think Vegas was. Vegas was a top five team in the league this year. And both of them looked hopeless once the Oilers turned up. And now this Dallas team, which, you know, granted, I don't think Dallas and Carolina are, like, the Rantanen trade between them feels fitting, in part because I think both teams are looking bigger picture. It feels like those teams were in transition over the course of the season as opposed to really going for it, but they also were successful enough that they kind of nominally went for it. But, you know, like, there's a gap between Colorado trying to finish their team perfectly and being like, we're in our window, and how Dallas kind of conducted themselves, I think.
Yeah.
And Carolina likewise. And so I sort of look at, but I look at the miles, the distance that Edmonton has put between them, Dallas, Vegas, and LA. You know, who in the West would you throw in there? Like, just Colorado?
Yes.
Just Colorado? That's the top four or five in the West? And likewise, Tampa Bay, like, who would you pick in the East ahead of Tampa Bay that's not Florida? Carolina.
Do
you think Carolina wins a 4-7 game series against Tampa Bay? Heck no. I don't think
so. Probably not, yeah.
Do you think Toronto does?
No.
I don't think so. Well, and also because it's Toronto.
Yeah, exactly.
even if they were going, like, so these teams have just dust lapped the field. So it's like, as much of a gap as there is between, for example, the Vancouver Canucks and a team like Vegas, which you feel when you watch those teams play one another, it's like there's levels to this, you know, and the level that Vegas is still like not that close to where Edmonton's at.
And of course, the other big talking point from last night, not handshake line related, which I have to say, I just have zero interest in that as a subject of discussion. I don't care.
Can we yada yada it in 5 minutes and then move on?
5 minutes, 5 seconds. I don't care what a coach decides to do or where they line up in a handshake line.
Me neither.
Do not care.
Nope.
Go nuts, guys. Do whatever you want. Anyway,
if you feel strongly about it, do you, Paul Maurice?
Yes.
If you want to convince your coaching colleagues not to go in the handshake line, fine.
That's super.
It'd be sick if a coach, though, was like, nah, F it. I'm going anyway.
Oh, yeah. I kind of thought Brudermorse would be like, no, that's your thing. It doesn't apply to me. Don't tell me what to do. But I have decided I'm going to make a big deal at the Little League game I'm coaching on Saturday about not going in the handshake line at the end of the game. Like, hey, come on. Hey, this is about the players. This is about them putting their bodies on the line.
I mean, that's a little bit more like self-interested, because who wants to shake hands with kids? So sticky.
No, it's a good game.
Sticky.
All the smart Alex on the other side of the team who say, bad game. Oh, you got me.
also, as I recall it from being a child, a handshake line is really just becomes like a high five line.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You're not shaking hands and having a little heart to heart with every kid. You're just going through in quick succession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like duck, duck, goose with sticky hands.
You're not like, hey, how's your family?
Have
a good
nightmare.
Summer.
Why are children so sticky?
That's a great question.
It's really unbelievable.
Anyways, okay, the other talking point, of course, is now this is six straight years the representative from the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup final will be from the state of Florida, which sparks another round of another discussion that I think is a lot more valid than the handshake line one, but similarly, I don't have a ton of time or interest in, which is the tax advantages that both Tampa and Florida are able to take advantage of, right? Playing in a no-tax, no-income-tax state. And look, is it an advantage? Yeah, of course it is. It's absolutely an advantage.
Yep.
But I do think, and I don't know if we have the clip here or not, but Connor Garland, Canucks forward, was on Canucks Brunch with Josh and Lena earlier, just about a little less than an hour ago. And they asked him, you know, because this has been a discussion not just related to taxes, but in general, right? In Toronto, oh my gosh, all the media pressure, and you heard it from the Panthers themselves. We, Jim Rutherford, well, I don't think we're going to be top of people's lists. And they asked him, hey, what would you say to a player considering Vancouver? What would you tell a player, hey, this is what it's like to play in Vancouver? And I thought he gave a really revealing answer, which was he said, Vancouver's a place you want to play when we're doing well, when we're winning. And I think that last part is so key because that really applies to every franchise and every city in the NHL. Florida spent a long time being the farthest thing from a destination for players, right?
Oh, yeah.
For most of its history. No one was like, oh, yeah, Florida just gets everyone. No, nobody thought that.
I mean, Artemi Panarin left a lot of money on the table to not even meet with the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
You know, John Tavares was never going to meet with the Florida Panthers.
No.
Like, is it an edge that the Toronto Maple Leafs get a bunch of Ontario boys to sign below market because they grew up as Leafs fans? Is that, like, an unfair thing that the league should try to legislate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so my point is, yes, there is an advantage, right? And you can sell that and you can spin that. But none of the advantages that different cities have, that different teams have, as you just said, right? Whether it's weather, taxes, you know, New York being a massive market, Toronto,
weather's
the Toronto boys.
Edge.
Yeah, absolutely. But none of them really kick into high gear unless you're doing all the right things.
Yeah.
Right? Like Anaheim, great weather, and they've signed some players. It hasn't moved the needle for them. And when they take that jump, it's not going to be because they attracted UFAs. It's going to be because they acquired young talent through the draft, which has nothing to do with their weather.
Yeah, I mean,
Arizona, incredible weather.
Well, Anaheim
didn't mean anything for them.
Anaheim's got a dated facility. But Anaheim's a perfect example because, like, over the last decade, we've seen them both contend and rebuild, bottom out.
We've seen them be a destination where Kevin Bieksa and Ryan Kessler are like, hey, I want to go there because of the lifestyle, but also because I have a chance to win. And then we've seen them be a team that has to overpay for older vets who aren't going to move the needle for them, right?
Exactly.
And I think that's a great example of what I'm talking about here, where we can fixate on the advantages that Florida and Tampa have, and they're real, and I'm not saying they aren't, although I do think sometimes they're overplayed, but the advantages really only come into play because they are exceptionally well-run organizations. And every team is going to have positives about playing there and negatives about playing there. And ultimately, it's the job of the team to take care of all the basic stuff of being a really well-run organization so that your advantages matter. So you can minimize your negatives and maximize your advantages and the positives from a player's point of view. And I just, like, I think we need to have a moratorium. If your organization is not really, really well run, you're not allowed to complain about the state income tax thing. Because that's not what's holding your poorly run team back. Like, Buffalo is not Buffalo because their players have to pay more tax than they would if they were playing in Florida. You know what I mean? That's not what's keeping Buffalo out of the playoffs year after year.
No, it's a monkey spot in Buffalo's case.
That's right. It's the curse that the wise woman of the woods put on them for some reason.
No, but I mean, really, it's ownership. Like, you can. When was the last time Buffalo made the playoffs?
Yeah.
When were they sold? Like, not super complicated here.
Yeah.
So you're right. And for example, like, one of the sharpest financial edges you can possibly have on planet Earth, especially in North America, but anywhere on planet Earth, is live in Canada and earn in USD.
Mm.
Like, that's like a 30% value surcharge, cost of living versus income. I mean, any half-decent financial planner, in addition to being able to do a ton of different stuff to shelter your money from Canadian tax rates, can also set you up to make a killing if you're sharp about leveraging that advantage. You know what I mean? Now, there's obviously choices people make. buying, not renting, et cetera, that complicate that. But,
well, and also in the Canadian example, obviously that hits a lot differently in Vancouver with the cost of living than it would, in, you know, Calgary or Edmonton.
Sure. But I mean, nonetheless, it's still a huge edge, especially if you're willing to rent. Like if you're willing to rent, earn in USD, man, buy, you know, some passive income generating rental properties. Here's the thread about it I wrote on X. Anyway.
The grind.
No, but I
drive down to Bellingham and bring like flats of groceries back.
Heck
so you don't
yeah.
so you pay those prices. Yeah.
Very, very seriously, there's all sorts of things you can do living in Vancouver to do real well for yourself. And of course, as much as you talk about the cost of living, the returns of investing in Vancouver real estate have also done pretty well for hockey players over the course of the past 30 years.
It's so true.
You know, like there's not a lot of Canucks players over the last generation and a half that have done poorly buying
and
in Vancouver.
Yeah. Like, oh, I wish I hadn't bought that house near Edgemont Village.
A short pamphlet of bad Canucks real estate investments over the last generation. So anyway, I mean, Stop whining. Start winning. That's it.
I also just think it's an organizational mentality thing where every team in the NHL should act like it's awesome to play for them. You know what I mean?
Correct.
That should be their internal mentality.
Yes.
And that should be, and I'm not even talking about Canucks specific things here. I'm just talking generally, right? That should be their internal mentality. And that should be what they project to players is it's a privilege to play for us. We're going to take care of you. We're awesome. You're going to have an amazing time here for reasons X, Y, and Z. And that doesn't mean you have to stick your head in the sand about some of the drawbacks of a given market, but act like it's awesome. Act like it's awesome to be a Buffalo Sabre. Act like it's awesome to be a Vancouver Canuck. You have to start from that point of view and believe it. And you have to be able to sell why it's awesome to players. I think that's a huge element of this as well. And it's not impossible. Like Connor Garland said, he's aware of the rewards. He saw it last year. This team's playing well and it's in the playoffs. It is a phenomenal place to be.
Yeah, people name like pizzas after you and stuff.
Yeah. But you have to, the players have to have the confidence that you're going
to.
Maybe
that only matters to me though.
I mean, that'd be awesome. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, players I went to a winery. I went to a winery in Penticton and they had a pizza called the JT Miller.
What was on it?
I don't know. It was like, it's a little bit spicy and hard to play against. And I'm like,
spicy.
I don't think you watch hockey.
You're like, this isn't really spicy.
Seems like it's overly inflated.
Anyways, you just have to give the players the confidence that they're actually going to get those opportunities. You know what? That's it. And then if you have that, you know what? You can work around the tax things. You can work around everything else. However, I don't want to pretend it's not a deal. It's not a thing. It is, but it wouldn't matter at all if they were poorly run organizations. They happen to be among the best run organizations in the NHL.
Where's the state tax thing helping Nashville?
Yeah.
Right?
Seattle, low tax, right. Low tax state.
So, I mean, it's insufficient to explain the run. I do think there's an element to which those teams have something of an edge. Ignoring it is counterfactual, but they also are at something of a disadvantage. And like one thing, because I've been on the other side of the coin in Florida, like players don't want to hear a pin drop in the home rink.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're bad in Florida, you disappear, right? When you're good in Florida, it's fun. When you're bad in Florida, no one knows who you are. Like no one knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got its own challenges and its own disadvantages. It, in some ways, too, it becomes like an entropy, like a self-fulfilling prophecy where it's harder to hold players accountable because you can go and hide. You can go and not forecheck and not throw hits and lollygag about the ice, and no one's criticizing you for it. No one even notices. That's hard, too. That can set in and create a loser mentality, just like being scared and entitled and being like, oh no, it's so bad that people care about our success. Like if you approach it that way, it's a disadvantage. If you embrace the challenge of it, it doesn't have to be. It can be something that drives your organization. It's just about managing things. Like that's it. Across the board, level playing field, every market, every team, every organization has different priorities, different challenges that they have to manage. And whoever manages them the most creatively, the best, with the most discipline wins. Florida turned themselves into a destination. They certainly weren't one, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. They've become one, right? That took work. That took new leadership. That took Bill Zito doing a ton of smart stuff. It took ownership investing in the team during a pandemic when no one else wanted to invest in their own, right? Like, it took an accumulation of sharp choices to get here. The tax advantage, it's not nothing. It's an edge that they can sell.
That you can lean into.
And by the way, they're smart about leaning into it. The moment they beat the Leafs, they're like, we feel so bad for them. It's so much more fun to play for us.
Yeah.
Like, great. That's so smart. Throw salt on the wound of a division rival. Because they're not just making the case for them. They're making the case against a division rival.
Mm-hmm.
Genius. They were so... And all of them hit the same notes. Like Barkov. Or not Barkov, but Marchand.
Kachuk. Maurice.
Maurice. All of their loudmouths. All of their motor mouths just went after it. Sharp stuff.
Yeah, the propaganda squad jumped into action.
Killing it.
And it was smart.
It was amazing. And so that's like that's just an example where it's like, oh, we have a small edge. Let's make it as big an edge as possible. Let's make it a multi-day talking point.
Mm-hmm.
This hurts an opponent. This helps us. That's it. Like, there are edges that the Vancouver Canucks have. There are disadvantages. One of the big disadvantages is not having a practice facility. One of the big disadvantages is playing in a city where when you're losing, fans feel, you know, a sense of ownership over the team and are likely to tell you that you're not good. There is an inordinate amount of pressure. There is more media attention, more questions. There's a media culture where, like, this is a real thing. Media culture in Vancouver where we, like, absolutely believe that the tough questions should be asked. And by the way, that's not just the media pool. Fans feel that way. How often do we do an interview with someone, and if it's not like hard hitting, people are like, oh, you're just sucking, you're scared to lose, you know, like fans expect that. There's an edge to fandom in the city, but this team is also massively cherished. It's a beautiful place to live. There's a ton of local talent coming out of this province, people who grew up Canucks fans and for whom this franchise and crest matters. We've seen players in the past, like, stick handle their way to Vancouver, Dan Hamhuis being the primary example, whose rights were traded twice and then still signed below market with the Canucks. But all of those edges only happen if you matter, if you're good. If players have a chance to win, then those things at the margins, the little edges, they work in your favor. If you don't have a chance to win, all of those little edges combined, state tax, blah, 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 whatever you want to say, weather, practice facility, all of that's a drop in the bucket. Like, it's all secondary to winning. You have to offer players a chance to win. And if you don't, then, you know, that has its own weight to it.
Okay, before we go to break here, I want to mention we got Brandon Astle, play-by-play voice of the Abbotsford Canucks, coming up next. Of course, their series with the Texas Stars, Western Conference Finals of the Calder Cup playoffs, gets going tonight. And very exciting, as part of the Sportsnet 650 Jays Care 50-50 drive that we're doing right now, we are giving away a pair of tickets to tonight's Calder Cup playoff game in Abbotsford, Game 1 against the Texas Stars. We'll do a trivia question. You text in the answer, 650-650. Please only text in if you can use the tickets, all right? Only text in if you can use the tickets. It makes it so much easier for producer Lena to choose a winner here and not go back and forth. So trivia question, 650-650. Text in the answer for your chance to win a pair of tickets to go see Abbotsford tonight, take on the Texas Stars. Here is the question. Who is the captain of the Abbotsford Canucks? Simple. Text in 650-650 with the answer. Who is the captain of the Abbotsford Canucks? Producer Lena will choose a winner. And I want to say the reason we're giving away tickets to tonight's game is because on Halford and Brough today, they said, hey, if we get $2,500 of donations during the show, we're going to give away these tickets. You guys responded. We went way past that number, so we're giving away the tickets. We're going to try another incentive here as well. If we get the jackpot to $10,000, by Canucks Central tomorrow, they'll give away a pair of tickets for Game 2. All right? So if we keep going and we get that jackpot up to $10,000, Canucks Central will have another pair of tickets for Game 2 of this series on their show tomorrow. Again, this is all for the Sportsnet 650 Jays Care 50-50, which is now live. You could win half the jackpot. The other half supports Challenger Baseball, which is just a fantastic program that helps kids of all abilities across BC thrive through sport. If you've talked to anyone who's been around the program, who's participated in it, who's had a kid in it, who's helped out with it, they will all tell you to a person what a great program it is. So this is a really important cause, and I think we're going to try to get some people involved on the station over the next month or so to tell a little bit about the story of Challenger Baseball. But again, a fantastic cause that we're trying to raise money for here. Tickets start at just $10. With bundles, you have even more chances to win. Don't wait. Get your tickets now at jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com or text MONEY to 650-650 now to get the link sent directly to you. That's jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com, or you can text MONEY to 650-650. Must be 19 or older and live in BC to play. Let's make a big impact together. Brandon Astle joins the show next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. We're giving away a pair of tickets to see the Abbotsford Canucks tonight. Lots of you got the answer right. The captain of the Abbotsford Canucks is Chase Waters. We will announce the winner later on in the segment. This hour of Canucks Talk, by the way, is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And we're going to chat here with Brandon Astle, Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play voice, momentarily. Before we bring him on, I do just want to reiterate something I said earlier in the week, previewing that we were going to have him on, which is we all had a lot of fun talking about the chair incident, but my understanding, Brandon being the consummate pro that he is, wants to keep the focus on the ice, on the team, on the game. So we're going to honor that. We're going to abide by that when we bring him on momentarily. And guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Now joining us on the hotline, he is the voice of the Abbotsford Canucks, Brandon Astle. Brandon, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, boys, and I got to be honest, I'm glad it's a phone call, not a video chat, because I'm getting ready to go to the rink soon. Just got out of the shower, and I'm pulling a Willie Nylander right now. I got my pants on, the tarp is off, I got the towel around the neck, I even got a Gatorade bottle here on my desk, so all that's missing is like Scott Oak and like the Hockey Night in Canada towel, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, but the gear behind you and all of it, that's fantastic. I love the visual image for our listeners. I appreciate
that. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But let's do it.
Yeah, no, it's not a visual medium, bud. You're fine. You're set. we don't need to re-rack this. So look, Abbotsford hosting a conference semifinal game for the first time in franchise history tonight. What's it been like just to be around this run and sort of see it all come together?
It has been remarkable, Thomas. And I guess a sign of what was going to come was when they went on that 13-game winning streak in March that carried on to near the end of the regular season. I mean, they've been in playoff mode since the middle of March, and their game has not changed. They've played the exact same way. This is a team that's built off of their depth, and that has held true so far through three rounds of the Calder Cup playoffs, and it obviously starts at the top. Manny Malhotra has done a great job from day one, and like coming in, he had some big shoes to fill. Jeremy Colton can coach. Mm-hmm. Before him, Trent Call can coach. Those two guys got to the NHL for a reason. And Manny coming in as a new head coach in the pro environment has really set a different foundation. And the team just has responded to what he has been preaching along with his staff. And boys, we got to talk about Ryan Johnson some more. What he has done, like he's been with the team since back in Utica in 2017. And talk about laying a foundation like I talk with Manny. I mean, Ryan Johnson and just the people he's brought in and the players as well has just all led to this moment. I mean, this team is made up of a bunch of guys that are playing for one another. It's been the same deal all season long. I don't have to tell you, Thomas and Jamie, how many guys have got called up and what Manny has had to go through on a day-to-day with his lineup changing from Friday to a Saturday. All of a sudden, he's out without some of his top players, which means more minutes and more responsibility for guys lower in the lineup. And they have been so good, keeping the team afloat, and just to see it all come together here in the playoffs, It shouldn't be too surprising now that you think about a big picture.
Yeah, and that point about Ryan Johnson is a really good one. You know, not only being with the team going back to the Utica days, but surviving, you know, regime and management changes at the NHL level, which is not always easy to do, right? New people come in and they want their own people in place. And there's Ryan Johnson just doing his job and doing it really, really well. We've had the pleasure of chatting with RJ a few times on this program, and you really just get a sense of how dedicated he is, how seriously he takes it. And is it that kind of mentality that he helps set, not even, you know, above the coaching position, right from the general manager spot for the whole Abbotsford organization?
Jamie, I'm so glad you mentioned that. He survived a regime change and ended up getting a promotion.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you what type of guy Ryan is, and his dedication to the Canucks franchise has not gone unnoticed. Him and Manny work so well hand in hand, and even the coaches before with Jeremy Colleton and Trent Call. Like, whenever I talk to those two guys, they just rave about working hand in hand with RJ. And he's been on the road with the team in the playoffs. I bump into him a lot, and microphone's not on. He is just the same guy. Like, he loves what he does. He really cares about these players and their well-beings. Him and Manny are so personable. Like, RJ and Manny know, like, the players' partners' names. Like, they ask how they're doing. They keep things really personable. But at the end of the day, they know they're there to do a job, and that's to develop players for the Vancouver Canucks. The run they're on right now is great, but that is not the end goal. Dress, I heard you say it last week. Like, what the Canucks are doing right now, I don't know if you said house money. I don't know if I want to describe it like that. Obviously, you want to win. But, like, the job that RJ and Manny have done just this entire year, it's a success no matter what happens at the end of the series. Obviously, I would love for them to go to the Calder Cup finals and win it all. That would be such a great story, and the players and the staff deserve it. But it all starts with those two at the top. I can't think of anyone else that my dealings with. Like, the hockey world is so great, working with so many teams, and I just can't say enough of how great it has been to deal with two guys, RJ and Manny, and I can see why their players battle for those two.
Yeah, and on Malhotra, I mean, Canucks fans obviously very familiar with him as a player from his days here with the Canucks. And then when he was hired, a lot of excitement, but I think also a lot of curiosity. First-time professional head coach Manny Malhotra, and obviously it's been just an incredible success for him behind the bench. Just give us a sense of what it's been like to kind of observe him in that role, deal with him on a day-to-day basis in his first year as the head coach of the Abbey Canucks.
A couple things stand out, Jamie. One is connection with the players. Right, he really gets to know them. He cares about them. He's been in their shoes. Manny's won a Calder Cup as a young guy, so he knows exactly what the trials and tribulations are like when it comes to the players in his locker room, so he can connect that way. And think about it as well. Manny has a 16-year-old son playing junior hockey just down the road. Unfortunately, the Chilliwacks Chiefs season came to an end. Caleb had a great year. And so he's not that much younger than the likes of Lekker Mackey and Kudratsev and maybe Willander if he starts in Abbotsford next year. So he really knows what that type of generation is like. Obviously, it's very phone-heavy, social media and all that kind of stuff. So Manny has seen that on a day-to-day with his son Caleb, which will allow that connection even more with the likes of the Canucks' top prospects and other young guys coming in next year. So that's a big part. Another thing is accountability as well. Accountability, spit it out, Brando. All season long, like, these players are held to a standard, okay? This team doesn't get a lot of practice time compared to others just due to the travel that they have to endure. So he makes sure this team practices with a purpose. There's a plan set in place, and if you're not practicing hard, you're going to know about it. And there's been a couple instances this year. I'm not going to call the players out. I'm sure you can look them up if you want, where some veterans that have had NHL experience sat in the press box, not just for a game, not just for two games, for a couple games on end, even weeks. And I imagine that had to be a tough pill to go through for these guys that deserve to play. But at the end of the day, they got to hold their end of the bargain up. And Manny has kept that same accountability throughout the entire lineup, whether you're playing your first year or you have over a couple hundred games in the NHL. And I think guys respect that. So those are just a couple things off the top of my head that I think about when it comes to Manny Malhotra.
Brandon, Victor Mancini has been a sort of person of interest for Canucks fans over the course of this run. We saw him get a look at the NHL level. He's obviously elevated his game in the Calder Cup playoffs. What have you seen there in terms of progress made from when you first saw him in the regular season down in Abbey after the trade to what we're seeing now when the stakes are highest?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about him, Thomas, because when he first came to Abbotsford, obviously it's midseason, new change of scenery. I'm sure a shock to be traded from New York to Vancouver. So there obviously was a bit of a new learning curve when it came to joining Abbotsford. And just the development and improvement I have seen since joining the Canucks has been so good. I wouldn't say night and day, because you can see the intangibles right off the hop of this guy. He's 6'3", almost 230 pounds, and can skate like the wind. So we have seen many parts of his game develop, and I'm starting to see a total package. Like when he got traded to Vancouver, no one knew much about him. You see some articles, you watch a little bit of tape. He's got some good offensive instincts. Like he's never really lit it up anywhere he's went. Like he had a 10-point season at University of Nebraska of Omaha. That was his best offensive year. And I think we're about to see a player that is getting a lot more comfortable with the offensive game. He's quarterbacking one of the power play units. He's always jumping up in the rush. And I've said time and time again, I think he takes the opposition by surprise with the way he can skate for such a big man. Like, you look at Tyler Myers and his skating ability. He's also 230 pounds. I don't know how these big guys do it. And just being able to take it in on the road and watch him practice in the game day skates, I'm like looking at his feet. Like, how does Victor operate on the ice? He's very light but plays a heavy game. And there's some instances, Thomas, in the last series. And for my money, he was the best player in the Colorado series, bar none. And I'm sure if you ask the Eagles on the other side who was the most impressive Canuck, I'd be shocked if most of their answers was not Victor Mancini. I've come on these airwaves. I really don't like propping up these prospects and saying a bunch of great things. I hate putting the pressure on them. But Victor is one that I am very happy he is in the Vancouver organization. We saw in the 16 games he played at Vancouver, fans can see that potential, and I am happy to report, like, his game has been taken to another level. No one plays more than him in the playoffs, and he does it in all situations. Like I mentioned, power play, penalty kill. There were some scenarios against Colorado. Like, he was just a man amongst boys. Like, they're not 50-50 battles. They're 70-30 if Victor's one-on-one against you. He is that good in coming away with the puck. He's just a man out there. And scary to think he's still developing and just 23 years old. He had his birthday in game number 5. And obviously someone that the Texas Stars are going to get to know really well here tonight.
We're talking to you, Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play voice Brandon Astle here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Game 1 between the Stars and the Abbey Canucks tonight in Abbotsford in the Western Conference Finals of the Calder Cup playoffs. And Mancini getting a lot of love, a lot of praise for what he's doing. Archer Shelov's in the crease certainly falls under that category as well. We've talked about it on the show. His record now of performing in big moments, Stanley Cup playoffs, Calder Cup playoffs, World Championships, is pretty remarkable considering his age. What have you noticed, you know, not even just between the pipes, but kind of between games, all that stuff, his routine, all of it, his personality? What have you noticed observing Archer Shelov through these playoffs?
Yeah, so I'm no goaltending expert. I just played one in the cul-de-sac, but what I see off the ice, because I want to talk about that, because we see him do this, as he mentioned, at all those levels at this time of the year. He raises his game in May and hopefully here in June as well in a couple of days. And like I asked Manny, like, What is Shelov's like away from the rink? And he's used different terms to describe him. When I asked him last, he just admires his professionalism and willingness to get better. And I noticed that just like taking it in from afar. He's the first one out there on practice. He's the first one out there on game day skate. Justin Pogge's firing pucks on him before the team comes out on the ice. He's someone that really takes his craft seriously. And he really has a perfect mindset for a goaltender. We all know that puck stoppers might have a bit of a screw loose here or there. I'm not going to call anyone out. I wouldn't say Artie is like that, but he is someone that just has that calm demeanor. And if you talk to him after the game, you wouldn't know if he gave up a goal or 5. He just is so steady in that regard. And I think that type of mindset is going to help him in the future. Like, he's not old. He's only 24 years old. And obviously what he's doing in these playoffs has been something special. And he just has that clutch D and Gene, boys. He's gotten 3 shutouts in closeout games. Like, that just doesn't happen. And if the award for top playoff performer was handed out by the league right now, I think Shelov would be right there at the top of the list. And I go back to what he's doing off the ice with his goaltending coach, Justin Pogge, and just the overall mindset, watching film. it's just been awesome to see, and hopefully that he can continue it here in this series.
Brandon, matchup with the Texas Stars. Now, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong here, is because of the AHL schedule, these teams have not met in the regular season. So this is going to be a fresh matchup for both teams. But with that in mind, I mean, I'm sure you've been doing your research. You've been following them all year, I'm sure. What are you looking for in this matchup between Abbotsford and the Texas Stars?
Yeah, Jamie, extra research in a short amount of time because, yeah, you said it. They have never played ever. This is the first meeting between these two teams. So they've never played in the regular season, so I'm not quite sure what to expect. Just by glancing at them through the regular season and what they've been doing here in the playoffs has been pretty remarkable. They are led by a top line that is just tearing up the playoffs. Ritz-Kovian, who's a rookie, he's a reigning AHL Rookie of the Year. A great defensive player as well. He's a two-time defensive forward of the year at Northeastern and is almost averaging 2 points a game in these playoffs. So shutting him and our good friend Cole Lynn down, who plays on his line, and Cameron Hughes, they've combined for 40 points in just 8 games. So that is obviously going to be a priority for Abbotsford. But, Jamie, when I look at this series, the one thing that I am looking at is the top six of Texas versus the overall depth of the Abbotsford Canucks. I mentioned the depth has led Abbotsford the entire year, and the one thing that I've admired about the Canucks as a team is their ability to shut down the opposition's best players. They have done it all year. I've talked to Manny a lot. They just defend really well, and that has been the case in these playoffs. And if you don't mind me here, I'm just going to rattle off some stats just quickly. So back to round one, the Roadrunners' top three scorers in the regular season combined for 3 points in 3 games. Okay? On they go to the next round against Coachella Valley. Their top three scorers in the regular season were Myers, Newman, and Morrison. Those three combined for just 4 points in 4 games. The last 5-game match against Colorado, they had the best offense in the league. Nobody scored more goals than the Colorado Eagles. Their top three scorers in the regular season, Matthew Phillips, Jacob McDonald, and our good friend Jason Megna. Okay? Those three had just 6 points combined in 5 games, and two of them did not score a single goal. And one of them, Jacob McDonald, had 31. He led all defense. He broke a league record for most goals by a blue liner. He got nothing. So I like the Canucks' ability to shut down big guns. Obviously, this will be a change of scenery, seeing what these three forwards in Texas has. So I think what I'm looking for tonight, how do the Canucks match up against that high-end talent, and will the depth shine through?
And Brandon, you mentioned the depth of the team, and obviously it's natural for Canucks fans most focused on the NHL level. We're paying attention to, you know, Mancini, Archer Shelovs, right, Lekkomäki, some of the guys that we've seen at the NHL level already. But as you said, it's a whole team game. It's a depth thing for Abbotsford. I'll give you a chance here. I mean, who's one or two names that aren't getting the publicity, that aren't getting the shine, that should be for how they're contributing to this run right now?
Well, I'm going to go to the man that just loves to fly under the radar. You guys know him. It is Guillaume Brisebois, one of the longest-serving members in the Canucks' entire organization.
Yep.
Right now. Talk about a consummate professional. He's just the same, whether it's a preseason game in September or a winner-take-all game in May to advance to the next round. He only knows how to approach a game one way, and that is to battle. That is to lead the team in the fight. That is to block shots. I mean, he's an absolute warrior out there. So he's definitely someone that deserves the headlines, but would prefer not to get them. Up front, I mean, just looking at some of the veterans, Jujhar Kara has been awesome. A great centerman playing on a line with Sammy Blay, Nate Smith. Those are three guys that do some great work along the boards down low. They muck and grind. They win 50-50s and took over that Coachella series, to be honest with you, and didn't play much in the last series against Colorado, but Manny put them back together in Game 5, which I think was a brilliant move and really shook things up. So those guys there. And then if I can call out a rookie, besides Lekkomäki, who has found his confidence again, which has been great to see. He had the second most points in that whole series against Colorado. But again, I love coming on here and talking about Ty Mueller. Just someone who brings a 200-foot game to the lineup. Doesn't care about scoring points, but he did that in a big game number 5 win. He had 2 assists on Monday afternoon. But he's not there for the points. He's obviously on the power play and all that, but he's someone who's relied upon in high leverage situations, taking faceoffs with a minute to go, try to protect the lead, taking faceoffs with a minute to go, trying to tie the game. So it goes both ways for him, and he blocks a ton of rubber, man. I would hate to see his legs and body after games. I'm sure there's just ice packs on them. And just to see his development throughout the year and what his ceiling could be, like he's got an NHL regular in his future coming because he is that good, and there's just nothing that he can't do on the ice.
Brandon, what are you most looking forward to in terms of getting the opportunity to call a conference final over the next 2 weeks? Just personally. I know you're a team first guy, but personally, what are you looking forward to the most?
Well, you know what, Thomas? You guys have seen it firsthand. Not just the community of Abbotsford has embraced the Canucks. It's Canucks Nation now. They are seeing how special this group is. And just to be a small part of it and talk about it through 60 minutes is an absolute dream come true. So just being involved in that energy and the fans and seeing the towels around the rink, that's just been something that has been hard to grasp. And at the end of the day, this is the best hockey you're going to see in the American Hockey League. Four wins away from the Calder Cup final. And just overall, Thomas, seeing the grind that these guys go through, I mean, it is unbelievable. Like, the travel's different, the playing style different. It's hard to put up points if you're a point producer. You just got to stay with it and not get in your head. Easier said than done. As I mentioned, there's not a ton of practice time. These guys, like, they're happy for their teammates getting called up, that's for sure. But there's obviously some players that are like, hey, I'm playing well right now also. How come I'm not getting a look? But at the end of the day, the Canucks can only call up one or two guys if they need someone. So it really is a mental grind. And seeing that firsthand in my last 4 years at the Abbotsford Canucks, it's just so great to see these guys get rewarded and have the run that they're on. And a couple of times it's been in jeopardy. Like, they could have been out in the first round. It was a winner go home game against Tucson. They stepped up to the plate. They beat them 5-0 Monday afternoon in the third round. Winner go home against Colorado. What do? Another 5-0 win. So they've just been building and building brick by brick. And just to see the team's hard work start to pay off and seeing the dividends, I mean, who knows what they can do here, boys.
Brandon, this was awesome, man. Really enjoyed chatting with you. Love the energy. I can feel your anticipation, your excitement. Have a great call tonight. And, hey, keep your head on a swivel down in Texas, all right?
Thomas and Jamie, great catching up. Looking forward to the game tonight. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. That is Brandon Astill, play-by-play voice of the Abbotsford Canucks. Game one in the conference finals against the Texas Stars tonight at 7. You can hear Brandon on the call here on 650.
We promised not to bring it up, but if he'd brought up a truly egregious take, like if he'd really gone in defending Sergei Bobrovsky, I would have told him to take a seat.
Yeah, you would have called him some yahoo.
Have another beer, Brandon.
You know what I was thinking about? The combination of some yahoo and try that again. It has like the vibes of a like shopkeeper in a small town in the 1950s putting a rowdy teenager in their place.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
You're right. So good.
Try that again, you yahoo.
Or like, yeah, 100%. Try that again, you yahoo. Like, you know, and they're definitely a hippie.
Yeah, I love it. I just absolutely love it. Everything about it from Brandon Astill. And yeah, you can hear his enthusiasm and his excitement about getting this series going with the Texas Stars tonight. And by the way, on that point, Dan is going to the game. He got the question right. Chase Waters is the captain of the Abbotsford Canucks. Lots of other people texted in as well, but Dan gets the tickets, says he's going to take his dad. So shout out to Dan. Have a fantastic time at the game tonight. And a reminder, if we get the Jays Care Sportsnet 650 50-50 jackpot up to $10,000 by Canucks Central tomorrow, they'll give a pair of tickets away to game two, which is on Saturday. So get those donations in. Again, it is jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com, or you can text money to 650-650. We're also, I was kicking around this with Barra, right? Because if people donate, which is great, we want you to, but only one person can win the tickets. We were trying to think of something all of the people that donate can enjoy. We came up with some answers that revolve around you.
Okay.
Like, for example, if we get to a certain number during our show, you can't compliment Utah for like 2 weeks or something.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Or you can't use the word juice. So we're going to kick some of those. Now, you're like, oh, yeah, that's no problem. And then you're like, uh-oh.
Oh, I'm happy to contribute to the cause. No juice.
I can't say juice.
How dare you? Like, what if I want some? Do I have to be like those kids in those 90 commercials and be like, orange where's drink?
Where's the good stuff, Mom?
Purple soda. Am I like, yeah. Are you reducing me to that?
Absolutely. So we're going to we're going to kick that around and see if we can come up with some good incentives. But right now, donate and we'll give away. If we get to 10,000 by Canuck Central, we'll give away a pair of tickets for game two of that series. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Open segment next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dimitri is going to join us at 1:30 today. Reminder, we're off tomorrow. Canucks brunch is on for an extra hour, 11 to 1, teeing up a nooner at the Nat. So our last show of the week, which means Dimitri is going to join us to wrap things up at 1:30. And are we based, like, we're just going to do a Panthers-Oilers preview with Dim, right? Are we there?
No.
Because we're not going to get a chance to talk to him if they wrap it up tonight before the series starts. I kind of feel like we have to.
We'll just enlist him. Yeah, I mean, whatever. We can talk about it hypothetically. I'm not going to be a hardo about it.
Okay, that's good.
What?
Because it just feels like, I mean, I would love to see it go 7, Dallas and Edmonton. I don't have that sense of it. I feel like we're done tonight is my sense of it. What do you think?
No, I think Dallas is going to take care of business on home ice most
likely. All right.
I think it's going to take a lot for Edmonton to knock these guys out.
I like it. Personally, I like that optimism.
Is it optimism?
Well, I mean, as someone who wants to see more hockey and like a game sure. 7 in the conference final, you know what I mean? I'm not even saying it from like
an Edmonton
the home
hater team,
perspective.
Though. Like it's like I'm just like, yeah, the home team's probably pretty good.
I just think Edmonton's really, really good.
That's yeah, me what too. I think, I agree with you.
Yeah.
They rock.
That's good analysis right there.
You're killing it.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber Texas line. And some other things I wanted to get into in this segment. First of all, just briefly passing along a note from Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly. Earlier today, who spotlighted the name Kevin Dean as a potential member of Adam Foote's staff, former assistant in Chicago and Boston, former defenseman in the NHL. And Dhaliwal didn't say it is happening, didn't report it or anything like that, but said this is a name to watch for one of the members of Adam Foote's staff.
Love to watch names. That's why I always stay for the full credits in a movie.
There is no better name watching opportunity than the credits.
There's so many names.
There's one.
I like to read them all out too. Like I read them. I'm like key grip.
At the end of Smash Bros. Melee, you play like the credits mini game where you shot the names. You must love that.
I loved that. That was such a good way to watch a name to watch. Yeah. Like I always want more names to watch. That's why I'm a reporter. Honestly, like, and you know what else I like to do? I like to watch the credits, and then I like to read them out loud, and then after every name I read, I say, good job.
I thought you were just going to say you rate them. So sometimes it's good job. Sometimes it's like, costumes could have been better.
No, always.
Didn't care for the costumes.
No, always. I always like to say good job. Good job.
Right.
Good job by you, buddy.
Wow, some of us have high standards.
Yeah.
Just applauding every piece of slop you see in the theaters.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see a lot of slop. You see a lot of slop?
No, I don't go to the movies very often.
You know what I enjoyed recently?
What's
that?
I'm
going to give a free plug out. I really enjoyed Fountain of Youth.
I don't even know what that is.
It's on Apple Plus. It's got John Krasinski, Natalie Portman, huge cast.
Okay.
And it's like, it's Guy Ritchie directed it. And it's like Guy Ritchie with an incredible cast doing Indiana Jones cover band material.
Okay.
Phenomenal.
I can see that. Love Indiana Jones.
And completely tongue-in-cheek, winking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the stakes are super high based on the situations, but the tone is literally always comedic.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, good production value, and then you get, like, 4 or 5 classic Guy Ritchie gunfight sequences interspersed into it. Like, not only is it good, your wife will enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's just a fun time. It was one of those movies I was watching. So I often watch movies on my laptop in bed with my wife. probably not the healthiest thing to do, but everyone does it, right? Mm-hmm. You do it?
No.
You never watch a movie in bed?
No, I have a TV.
Yeah, I also have a TV.
Why would I do that?
Producers, chime in. Do you ever watch a movie in bed?
I have a big TV in my bedroom.
Nice. So yes. Short answer,
But my partner doesn't like watching TV in bed.
There, fair
enough. So I'm usually solo.
You shouldn't do it.
It is a bad
TV in the bedroom, guy.
Thank you. Thank you. It is the best worst thing you can do.
I did this in like college.
Yeah,
it feels like
a
college thing to me.
Yeah, it's sick. You have kids.
I have a couch and a TV.
Yeah, I also have a couch.
That's what it's for.
I have a couch and a TV, and my TV is like for sports.
Drance also has a mini fridge in the corner, stocked up.
The claw reacher. Sorry, to be clear, I actually do, but it's because I live in one of those apartment complexes where like my bedroom is basically in the normal, you know what I mean, in the hallway.
Yeah.
So my mini fridge is beside where I feed my dog and under my wine collection, but it happens to be pretty close. Like I could definitely roll out of bed and be at my mini fridge, but I am technically leaving the room. just saying. Anyway. We're watching it, and I knew my wife was really into it because usually she'll fall asleep, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I expected that she'd fallen asleep because she hadn't said anything in a bit. And I turned over and looked over, and not only was she still watching intently, but she'd put her glasses on. That's how you know it's a good movie.
She did the lean forward.
Yeah, 100%. She was the lean forward meme. So anyway, that's my recommendation to you.
Have you watched Mobland, speaking of Guy Ritchie?
I haven't.
Oh,
good?
Fantastic.
Okay, I'll check it out. It's a Guy Ritchie movie?
It's a Guy Ritchie series with Tom Hardy and Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I will watch that. I've seen now I know what you're talking about. It's been on my list. I need to get to it.
I liked this from Minor Matt in Abbotsford. I don't even watch movies anymore. I just skip to the credits and then go, wow, what a cast. There is a tier of movies and shows sometimes for me where it's like enough people are talking about it in kind of like hushed terms, like there's some surprise or something. And I'm vaguely interested, but I know I'm never going to make the time to watch it, so I'll just go and read the Wikipedia summary. I'm like, I just want to know what people are talking about here.
Oh, that is cheating.
Just watch the trailer.
Yeah, that's cheating.
No, but the trailer's not going to have the spoiler in it.
You're a big Cole's Notes guy, huh? Were you a big Cole's Notes guy?
No, I wasn't, actually.
University?
I should have been. Probably would have been smart.
No.
But I did not.
It would have been lazy. Do the work.
Man, I was lazy.
Watch the movie.
No, but work. I don't need to do it.
Maybe you should.
Like valuable labor watching like some horror
movie. Maybe you'd get to it if you watched it in bed.
Maybe if I made the time.
I like you being high and mighty about not watching movies in bed because you definitely use your phone in bed.
Yeah, not much though. I'm pretty good. I gotta say, my sleep hygiene is pretty on point.
Is it?
Yes.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah,
I can't fall asleep without something on the TV.
That's wild.
I totally get that.
Sickness.
It's no, but have you tried? Have you gotten a white noise machine?
I hate white noise machines,
what?
And it doesn't make any sense.
You have.
I
a white
need
noise
the
machine
office
for
in the background.
No. You don't have
no.
a white noise machine.
We tried
for your
it.
Kids.
Never really made a difference.
But it didn't make a difference for you.
No. Well, they go in and they shut up and go to sleep.
No, but you didn't enjoy it.
No.
Oh man.
I sleep fine. I sleep great. I'm a good sleeper.
What's your white noise of choice?
My white
like ocean sounds
or just a
fan?
The most technical, analytical fantasy football breakdowns I can find. Like I'm talking
okay.
like.
So you're talking about like not literal white noise.
Well, I like literal white noise too.
Sure.
I like white noise machines. I throw on fantasy football podcasts, put the noise canceling headphones in, and the ultimate is a plane. The moment I get on a plane and you have like the hydraulic sounds and like the. I'm immediately asleep.
This is an incredible submission from Sean from White Rock. First, he says a fan is the most elite white noise.
Yeah, you know what?
Which is good. Although I would also say like
true.
Like heavy rain outside, elite while
oh,
you're
yeah.
sleeping.
Well, that's, I mean, that's more like, that makes me feel so cozy.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's great. But he also says, or old golf rounds on YouTube. Which is just a phenomenal idea.
Yeah.
An
you know
absolutely incredible idea. Just throw on the 2009 Masters Sunday and drift off to sleep with Vern Lundquist in the background.
Hell yeah.
That's an incredible idea that I've never considered.
I, you know what? Now that it's been proposed to me, though, I am absolutely doing it. So I'm an ace, though, at falling asleep on airplanes.
Okay.
And one bad thing about it is when I fall asleep on an airplane, so this is going to be visual, so I'm going to just have to walk listeners through it. I lean forward somewhat in my seat because, as we all know,
you don't
recline.
Lean back.
I don't recline.
Yes, of course, of course.
Because I'm not an inconsiderate jerk.
All right.
And so I lean forward slightly, and then I tilt my head up, which I actually did, which is why these sound modulated there, because I'm not very smart. I tilt my head up, and then my mouth opens. Okay? So almost like a fountain pose. And I fall asleep like that. Just like,
with your eyes open.
It literally looks like I'm eating a hamburger in the air. And when I wake up, my neck is so sore, but I'm so rested.
So you don't have a travel pillow?
No, absolutely not. You know what? I should, because that pose is like designed for
a
travel pillow.
That's why people have travel pillows, yeah.
But then I'd have to have an extra thing on me. I don't know. I like to travel light. I don't sure. have an extra thing.
Sure. People so, clip it to the backpack or whatever.
So that's how I fall asleep. And I'm an expert at falling asleep before takeoff and landing on the thud of landing. Like, in my experience, flights don't even happen.
Drance falls asleep to a voice note going over Utah's elite underlying profile. That would just keep you up, though. You'd be too excited. You'd be like, I can't fall asleep now.
That team is coming.
I'm thinking about Logan Cooley.
Logan Cooley, the great teleporting man.
Austin and Langley says, 10 minutes of white noise, mini fridge, movie talk. Can we rip on the top six instead? Well, I don't know about ripping on the top six, but we can bring it back to the Canucks a little bit here. And as we continue to go through, you know, a lot of the benchmark, the classic Canucks talk off-season content, your latest piece at The Athletic looking at the efficiency, ranking the efficiency of the contracts the Canucks currently have on the books going in to next season. And this is always a fascinating exercise, and it's one that's evolved quite a bit and changed quite a bit since we've been doing the show, right? From where when it started, it was not a pretty picture necessarily. And Jim Rutherford, right?
Yeah, there'd be like eight millstone contracts.
And it's like, oh boy. And you'd be like kind of straining to find sometimes the real steals or the team friendly deals. And, you know, famously Jim Rutherford saying,
I would say though, in this exercise, just to like, because you're right. I think you've made an astute observation. But I would say I wasn't that harsh a grader this time. If you were within $1 million of fair value based on the net rating model, mm-hmm. I just sort of put you in fair value, but like what's the list of the fair value guys? Do you have it up right now?
I can look at it.
Sorry, can you?
In a second. Okay, fair value. We have Jake DeBrusk, Philip Ronick, Teddy Bluger. That's it.
Okay, all of those guys, though, were actually contributing negative value given their cap hits last season.
Right.
Just not significantly. Like, you know, DeBrusk's value was like 5.3. Hronek's value was like 6.7. And Teddy Bluger's value was like 1.7,
mm-hmm.
according to the net rating model. So all of them were actually in the negative. Now, I guess I could have like been like slightly negative, but I, you know, despite what people say about me, I don't always want to be that way.
But also, and now, would it be fair to say that the changing salary cap environment played a role in that decision on your part?
Totally.
We just look at them all in a different way now.
We're talking about an 88. Also, the metric is grading them in an $88.5 million cap environment. So for next season, 95.5, they don't even have to play better than they did. And some of them are decent bets to play better than they did. I mean, if you're like Jake DeBrusk isn't a guy who creates his offensive environment. He's a guy who takes advantage mm-hmm. well and plays good two-way hockey in a good environment, right? Like, and he can still produce in a bad environment, but he's just not a guy who creates his own environment. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who can capitalize off of a good one and not hurt you, not take away from the environment. And so if the offensive environment improves, if Pettersson plays better, for example, like Jake DeBrusk could provide more value. You know what I mean? But also, if he doesn't, you're going to be like, yeah, he's totally fine.
Well, you're not going to be like, it's his fault. You know what I mean? Like, oh, if only we had spent that $5.5 million on a different complimentary winger. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
He's a complimentary top-of-the-lineup winger who performed like a complimentary top-of-the-lineup winger. The Hronek one's a little more interesting because last year he provided so much surplus value because he was also paid $4.4, but his salary went up on this new contract. And, you know, $7.25 million for a defender, it's like kind of low-end 1A D pay. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he's that player. Like, I really think he's more like a credible top pair guy
mm-hmm.
than being like a guy who, oh, if he wasn't in Vancouver, he'd not like, again, Harley or Taves are the types of guys where it's like you trade them away from Makar and Haskinen and you'd be like, oh, that guy's a legit 1A, the best defender on this team. I just don't think that's what Filip Hronek is, even though, you know, he could play PP1 and he's a really good player. I just think he's a top pair caliber guy. next year he'll be a surplus value contributor, provided that he's as good as he was this past season. I just, you know, there's an element to which I think maybe as a result of what the first 3-4 months looked like, and as a result of how cogent his partnership with Quinn Hughes has been, we've maybe gotten a little bit ahead of our skis in terms of what he's actually contributing.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like, I think there's a case to be made that he's Vancouver's third most important defender after Marcus Patterson.
But Hronek is also a the evaluating it differently in this cap environment might apply to Hronek more than any other player.
Yeah,
you know
totally.
What I mean? When we start to see the comps come in. And
he's a really good player,
given his age when he signed as well, right? So you start to look at the term and you're like, yeah, in 2 years, that's going to look entirely different than it does right
and
now.
And he was an RFA 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. If he was expiring now, he's going to make $9 million. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be looking at the same sort of logic that Gavrikov is, right? So factoring an opportunity cost, his contract's a steal. Anyway, that's fair value deals. I am looking specifically in going through this exercise at the net rating model, which does assign a market value number to each player. Should we get to Pettersson?
Well, I mean, we can start at the one notable. So obviously we all know what the best value contract on the Canucks is. It's Quinn Hughes, one of the best value contracts on a year-by-year basis, not total length, obviously, but on a year-by-year basis, one of the best in the NHL. As you say, like, if no one would blink if he was the highest paid defenseman in the league, and he is far from that. But the other one that really stands out as an incredible team-friendly deal is Keefer Sherwood, who, of course, a steal at $1.5 million, another year left on that. And I do think it's worth just noting that for a second, because it's one thing to be like, oh, hey, that's a nice find in your bottom six. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that guy played well, and we weren't necessarily expecting it. It's another thing to really generate meaningful surplus value, right? To not just go from like, hey, we're paying him 1.5 and he's playing like a $2 million player, but to be a step above that, which is what Keefer Sherwood was this year. Like, that's a big deal for a team that is going to have to use every bit of cap space and assets they have to improve their top six. To have players like that in the bottom six is a big deal. Now, somebody texted in, should we sell high on Keefer Sherwood? You also get a sense, if you're another team out there and you're looking like, hey, we have limited cap space, we're a contending team, how can we squeeze in another legitimate contributing forward? Keefer Sherwood would be a very interesting name. So makes a ton of sense for the Canucks, would make a ton of sense for other teams. I think it's fair to have the debate on him, but I did just want to highlight his status as a real steal on this team as well. So yeah, Pettersson. The millstone, all alone in the millstone category. This is Elias Pettersson, of course, at the bottom.
He has to be.
Of course.
Yeah, he has to be. And what's sort of interesting is when you... I actually thought it was clarifying for me in terms of really having a sense of where Pettersson fell short this past season, and on a more granular, like less emotional, less frustrated watching him play perspective, which is partly what relying on a statistical model will give you, is just that, like, take a deep breath, step back, think about the whole. And, you know, the effectively Pettersson was like a $6.5 to $7 million contributor this past season, right? He was a top of the lineup center who wasn't trusted in super difficult matchups, but actually was like a pretty high-end defensive contributor. Team basically came out even in his 5-on-5 minutes. He blocked a ton of shots. He drew a ton of penalties, had an elite impact on the club's penalty differential, which, given that this team's special teams were a strength, is significant. And, you know, he ends the season with 58 points, or 58 point per 82 game pace, right? It's a 60-point, solidly reliable, wins his minutes at 5-on-5, excellent defensive center. And by the way, we saw when he left the lineup what this team's defensive game looked like, and it was not pretty, if you remember, like Columbus. And that's, you know, that's not as bad in some ways as I feel like our conversations about him have been, but it also does spotlight the extent to which, like,
It's a role completely out of step with his salary.
And with how we think of him.
And with his role on the team.
Yes.
With the position that he is theoretically filling on the team.
Correct.
It's just completely, it's nowhere near.
No, it's like a good top six caliber center when he's paid to be the reason you win games.
Mm-hmm.
As an elite game-breaking piece. And that level of inefficiency comes out to, you know, $4.5-5 million on an $11.6 million cap hit. that's difficult. That's like hard to work around. That's, you need to go on one of those Dallas Stars runs at the draft table to work around it and still be an elite team if you're going to have a player, you know, representing that much negative value on your books. And so, you know, in sort of thinking about that, it's like, first of all, the range of outcomes is wide because, I don't know, like if Pettersson bounces back next season, I don't think we're going to be stunned. And if Pettersson looks the same as he did this year, I don't think we're going to be stunned.
Nope.
And like, I just don't envy Canucks management, because how do you weigh that over the course of the next 5 weeks? Because we're getting down to the nitty gritty here, too. Like, mm-hmm. decision time is coming. That NMC is going to kick in. And while the organization doesn't view that as a hard and fast deadline, nor should they just moved Soucy and Miller with ironclad no move protection or no trade protection, respectively. I mean, that it feels like the next month, because you could look back and say, like, they shouldn't have done that contract. They should have traded him. I mean, there were voices internally making that argument. But when that deal came through, it was a no-brainer. In fact, it felt like a coup that they were able to get it done. Mm-hmm. And it felt like Pettersson had let them off the mat a little bit in terms of the aggregate total value
leverage
of the deal.
Yep.
And so, like, I don't think it's like that bet. That was such an obvious tap-in. 32 NHL general managers all would have made it. I don't think that decision to extend him when they extended him is like a era-defining bet for Patrick Alvin or Jim Rutherford. But I think keeping Pettersson this summer would be, right?
Yes. And I see what you're saying, because this is kind of probably the last take back opportunity. Your last chance for a
Your last chance
here.
To re-roll.
Yeah. This is it.
Yeah, this is it. And I honestly don't know that, you know, sometimes I'm like, it's obvious what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
This is not one, like, I can see the argument for both sides, and I do not envy Canucks management sort of considering that decision over the next 5 weeks.
The other thing, and you made the point about one of the advantages of using a model like this, is it helps remove the emotion from a situation. And I just think the internal decision-making process for the team right now, there must be so much emotion wrapped up in this dilemma, in this question mark, you know what I mean? In this decision that they have to make. It's the kind of thing that's really going to test the processes, the culture, all of it, everything about how the front office operates. Like, this is why you want to have a really high level functional management group that can talk through things, that can operate without emotion to make the big decisions like this. Because this is one of the biggest decisions that that any team is going to have to face this offseason. And as you said, it's pretty easy to lay out the arguments on either side. They're going to have to talk to teams. They're going to have to see what's out there, and they're going to have to make a massive, massive decision on Elias Pettersson in the next month or so here. Before we go to break, and Dimitri's going to join us on the other side, to wrap up the white noise conversation, Andy in Vancouver says, my white noise is Canucks talk if I miss the show live. Even my wife, who knows nothing about hockey, makes me put it on now when we are going to bed. I'll take that as a compliment.
I will too, but also, like, oh boy, I hope I haven't given you stressed nightmares.
The dulcet tones of Jamie and Trance sending us off to bed.
You know, it's such a frustrating
feeling. The image of someone's non-sports fan wife being like, put on Canucks talk so we can fall asleep.
I love
just
that.
Very funny.
So
to me.
Good. Well, just last thing. You know what? Like, I have this. The most frustrating experience that I have on a somewhat regular basis is the experience of running away from something in a dream where you're never quite fast enough.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That experience, one of the most frustrating things. You know, that one can experience in their subconscious. And the idea of, like, having that happen while we break down Canucks ephemera is just, like, too much for me. I'm just like,
this is the last thing I need right now.
It's like, that's horrible.
All right, we'll take a break. Dimitri joins us to wrap up the week for us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Just a young boy, I didn't stand a chance in hell.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We're broadcasting live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Guests on Sportsnet 650 usually call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries, but Dimitri goes the extra step and he joins us in studio. He's the host of the Hockey PDO cast. What's going on, man?
I wasn't even in today. I had a day off.
That's incredible.
And I just drove in just to hang out with you guys because it's always such a delight.
You truly do not need to do that.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor next time. Go easy on yourself.
No way. If I get the opportunity to hang out with you guys in the studio, I'm taking it.
You've got too much dog in you for that. Are you ready to bury the Dallas Stars? Is it over? Is the rematch official? I mean, it's not official, but you know what I mean.
It certainly feels that way, especially as how inevitable the past two games felt where, you know, in the first two, they split them at home. They got clearly outplayed in both of them besides that third period barrage on the power play in game one. I thought they played much better in games three and four in Edmonton. It deserved a better fate. And yet as those games progressed, you could almost see the reality kind of dawning on them and the Oilers just taking over in the third period of both those games. So listen, they're at home. I'd expect a big push out of the gate. I just don't know if they're going to be able to get it done.
And it is interesting with Dallas because we talk so much about Carolina bumping up against their ceiling, right? And, which I think is a totally valid conversation and an interesting one. Now, Dallas has made the cup final. They made it there against Tampa, so that is different. But there must be a similar sensation of like, hey, we go on these runs every year, but we also kind of always feel outclassed at the end of it. If you're Dallas, you do the Mikko Rantanen deal, you get the extension. That's incredible. It gives you that element at the top of your lineup. What's your plan for trying to make that one next jump up where you're not getting sent home by Edmonton every year?
Yeah, it's tricky because I think heading into the postseason with all the uncertainty around Miro Heiskanen and him not being available to start and how stretches of that Avs series looked, I think if they had lost in a competitive, like if they didn't have that Rantanen explosion in game seven, third period, they lose that series in seven, we're having a bit of a different conversation because it's almost like, well, this was going to happen.
Yeah, we didn't have Heiskanen and it's a reload year and whatever.
This is
a
throwaway year. We competed really well in this series.
Colorado's really good. We're so unlucky to get them in the first round. Yeah.
Certainly. And then you'd be like, next year, the Stars are going to be the Stanley Cup favorite. And then Heiskanen comes back in that Jets series. They close them out. And now they have this sort of replay of last year's matchup against Edmonton. So I think it's a fair question in terms of the way you're framing it. Beyond just improving the right side of the blue line, which is obviously always going to be a massive concern, I'd have faith because Jim Neal's a good GM based on all of his other moves, yet they had a chance to do so last summer and then at the deadline again, and they were like, nope, we're actually fine with Cody Ceci, Ilya Lyubushkin, and Matt Dumba, who's not even playing in the playoffs for them, as the right side. That's the obvious solution. The forward group, they're going to shed a lot of money with Jamie Benn coming off the books. We'll see if
they don't have cap space, though. Like, they're going to have some brutal decisions here.
They will, but I think their forward group's pretty set regardless.
Oh,
and I think they've also shown kind of like this, I don't know what you'd equate it to, but a unique kind of like infrastructure in place where some of these veterans or guys who have already made a bunch of money in their career are very happy to come and play for a very team-friendly one-year deals, kind of like Pavelski was doing for years, Matt Duchene the past couple years. I imagine they're probably going to retain Granlund, who they acquired at the deadline, on a very similar type of contract structure. So they have that going for them. A guy like Wyatt Johnson, who's really struggled this postseason, we know he's going to be probably a superstar, honestly, based on what he's already done at this stage of his career. And so he's going to get better. You'd hope Heiskanen and Robertson, who are playing now, but had weird years mired with injury, if they're healthier, like, I think they should still be viewed as probably the Stanley Cup favorite heading into next year if they don't do anything, just based on all the guys they already have in place.
Yeah. Ahead of Florida and Edmonton, though? Because it feels like there's still a gap to close with those two teams. Feels to me that way, anyway.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think the Stars have played pretty well in the series, though.
Yeah,
I know they might lose
in
five games, and there's no time for moral victories at this point in the postseason, especially when you lose to the same team in back-to-back years and kind of bump into that ceiling. But I haven't really watched this series and felt like, man, the Stars. Like, it didn't feel like what we saw from the Hurricanes against the Panthers, where it's like they clearly can't keep going in this direction because there's just no scenario where this team is good enough to win it. I feel like the Stars with a couple bounces, Stuart Skinner not playing the best three games he's played in his career in back-to-back-to-back sequences, I feel like this could look very different. So I don't know. I wouldn't be too doomer about their outlook heading into next year just because of how this series has gone.
I agree with that. They do have some people like Mason Marchment.
Yeah,
for sure. Feels like he's going to be, you're going to hear a lot of Mason Marchment trade talk. I wonder about Tyler Seguin, because that would be a get out of jail free card for them.
I think Tyler Seguin is, without, this isn't like reporting, this is pure speculation, kind of reading the tea leaves.
Yeah.
I'd expect he's probably not going to play again after the season. And if he does, it'll be on LTIR and coming back for next postseason. Because like,
yeah,
the amount of work he's done just to like be able to play all these games and come back this year with the nature of the injuries and the surgeries, like I think that's a very logical kind of resolution after this postseason is done.
Yeah, and by the way, given what he's been through, given the severity of some of those injuries and some of those surgeries, the fact that he's played this well is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, what a testament to a guy whose commitment to the game was questioned as a younger man. Like, no one can say that about Tyler Seguin today. He's everything you'd want from a star-level player in terms of the resilience that he's come into late in his career. I just want to give him a ton of credit for that. Yeah, there's ways around this. So the Duchesne, if the Seguin thing unfolds a certain way, that would basically solve the whole issue. Marchment, and then you've got Labushkin and Dumba, $7 million combined. Reallocating that cap space shouldn't be that difficult.
Yeah, they're both expiring, right?
Yeah. No, Labushkin's got
the extra year.
So, but I would think there's ways around that one. So, yeah, I mean, they should be able to find a way to remain elite. And I do think they're an incredible team. So now that we've buried them.
Hold on.
Eulogizing the Dallas Stars.
I just want to ask, if a team signs Matt Duchesne to a 5-year deal worth $7 million this summer, how happy do you think they're going to be with that contract?
Oh, man. That is going to be a tough one. I mean, he's been awesome for them the past 2 years in terms of what they paid for him, with Nashville still paying out a bunch of his salary. This postseason's been tough. He doesn't have a single 5-on-5 point yet. I know he scored the power play goal in game one, but had a gimme empty net shot in the first period of game four and just hit the post on it and missed. And it felt like if he got going at all offensively, maybe this is a 2-2 series at the very least, if not Stars being
out. No 5-on-5 points in the playoffs is a wild stat.
It's remarkable. That's 17 games or so,
yeah,
I think.
And he plays a lot.
Yep. Yeah, and they've had chances. Like that line with him, Marchman and Seguin, had a ton of looks in game four. They just haven't been able to capitalize, and that's really been the difference.
Chance they overreact on Wyatt Johnston's tough playoff?
No way. No, I mean,
because that's where
they were very, very excited to get him to sign that extension on the same day they acquired Rantanen. Yeah,
because that's where the Canucks should be like, we'll take all your bad money and give you Philip Peronic for Wyatt Johnston, baby.
No, I think Wyatt Johnston's going to be in Dallas for a long time.
I agree with you, but
yes, yeah. I would be shocked if that was their decision making process.
But allow a man to dream. Okay, so what? How would you, let's start with handicapping it. How would you handicap an Edmonton versus Florida Panthers series? And I mean like raw numbers, like who should be favored?
I'd say the Oilers, just because of having home ice. Now both teams have gone on the road on all three matchups to date and obviously won all of them. So I don't think the Panthers necessarily can't go into Edmonton and win games on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like when you watched how last year's series transpired and having that game seven at home for Florida and being able to just get Barkov and Forsling out against McDavid as often as possible, that's just going to be much more difficult to do. Edmonton, that crowd is amazing, as we've seen the past couple games, and they're really good at home. And so it provides them with some different opportunities. It's pretty much a coin flip series, and I'd give them the slight edge just because of that home ice factor. Now, if Dallas is able to stay alive and that series starts on June 7th as opposed to June 4th, and all of a sudden Florida has 10 days off or 9 days off before, and Tkachuk can get healthier, and Reinhardt and Luostarinen, who left the last game as well, that could be kind of swinging it back in Florida's favor. So maybe we'd revisit it if that happens. But I'd say Edmonton has a very, very slight favor.
The health factor is really fascinating here, because it feels like Florida could be basically perfectly healthy, and now Edmonton has lost Zach Hyman. It looks like they're going to get Ekholm back tonight. We'll see what his effectiveness is, but I think that's a good point. Just like the margins are so thin. If they have to play two extra games here, what does that do to the wear on all the players? Do you lose somebody else? That could be the thing that flips it from like a 48% chance to Florida to like a 52% chance, you know?
Yep. And Connor Brown is out as well. Yeah. Oh, he's traveling the team, so he might be back. But yeah, I mean, every single extra game you have to play all of a sudden just increases the risk of someone either getting injured and being out or getting banged up and not being quite as effective. And it's been a struggle for Edmonton all year with McDavid missing a bunch of time with injuries, Dreisaitl not really looking 100% even throughout this postseason run. So yeah, I imagine they're going to try very hard to avoid any of those extra unnecessary miles. And if that happens, I'm excited. I'm excited that series is going to start as soon as the fourth.
Yeah, that it's a big swing tonight for sure for the Oilers here. I do feel like they're relatively well positioned to, and I'm not trying to downplay the impact of losing Zach Hyman because it's massive, but I do think they're relatively well positioned given their overall depth to at least keep going without it being a catastrophic loss. I mean, they've got Jeff Skinner, who had 30 points and barely played on the power play, who's made one or two appearances all postseason long.
Yep.
That they can insert into the lineup. You know, I think that if you want to fatten your lineup and have a good second line going, like, I think that Podkolzin, RNH, Kane can still work and do much the same stuff that they've managed to do with Hyman, even if it's not going to be as dynamic. And certainly your finishing ability going from Hyman to Podkolzin is worlds different. But, you know, environmentally, I think that line can work. Like, how do you think they're positioned to handle that loss?
I think they're much better positioned to do so than I would have thought previously, just because of how well RNH in particular has played, and he's been such a difference maker playing alongside McDavid. So, you know, you can bump Perry up there as well and have reintegrate Skinner and kind of more of a bottom six role as well. There's moving parts there. You obviously always had the nuclear option of just playing Dreisaitl and McDavid together, something they haven't really done much of in this series. So there's certainly options for Chris Knobloch. They have they have the personnel, and also with home ice, all of a sudden, if you load up Dreisaitl and McDavid, for example, maybe you can get them against that Tkachuk, Verhaeghe, Bennett line that's a bit more vulnerable defensively, and they could really cook against those guys. So yeah, I think it's going to be a big loss. I mean, you saw what Zach Hyman did with the two goals in game three and just how physical he is and how many battles he wins and what a nice kind of tertiary piece he is on that line with McDavid and RNH. So it's a massive loss, and I don't think we should downplay it, but they certainly have enough guys where they can tinker with it on the margins and probably get by.
I also do think that 11-7 might be their optimal lineup. I really want to see it when Ekholm comes back. I think it's a good way of buying insurance in case Ekholm isn't 100% ready.
Well, and none of the six defensemen deserve to come out. The lineup.
Yeah. No, well, I'm worried about Darnell Nurse again if you remove him from
Troy Stetcher.
Yeah. Like, I genuinely think that that's not a call that you should make if you're Edmonton, but then who are you taking out? And then, you know, there's the Panthers part of it where, because of that Forsling Barkov blanket, they're able to throw on McDavid. And, you know, people are like, well, no one has an answer for McDavid. It's like, man, Florida's as close as we've got in the NHL right now. Having 11 forwards and then mixing and matching McDavid through the lineup completely at random, especially given that, you know, what the Edmonton fourth line there is still going to be guys like Connor Brown, like guys who can finish, guys who can do damage. I feel like that's a good play for the Oilers to strongly consider. I'd be fascinated to see if they trial it tonight, because I think that could be a meaningful edge for them against a team that plays like Florida does.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think one thing, you know, when you compare these two teams compared to the last time we saw them play in the Stanley Cup final last year, I do feel like this line, and we'll see, it sounds like Lucarina's not going to miss any time because he missed, the final two periods of that closeout game last night for Florida. The way him, Lundell, and Marchand have played together.
Yes.
And what we saw from Paul Maurice in a similar spot against the Leafs. Now the Leafs had so much less bottom six juice even than the Oilers do right now. But when that series shifted and they had last change at home ice in round two, they actually were very comfortable and tried to use Lundell against William Nylander and John Tavares, who they viewed as the most dangerous offensive threat in that series for them. And they were awesome. They put the blanket on, and then so all of a sudden now, I don't think they were playing at that level necessarily last year for Florida, and they still wound up winning. And I think that gives them another option where if Knobloch does get McDavid away from Barkov, all of a sudden you have another sort of defensive source, I think, to throw against.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask just generally, because we are staring down now the first Stanley Cup final rematch in, what, since 08-09 was the last one? And how do you evaluate these teams based on, like, last year's versions of them? Because I think throughout the regular season, we would have looked at both of these teams and said, well, they're not quite there. They're not quite where they were last year when they were the two best teams in hockey. But now I think especially post-trade deadline with Marchand and Seth Jones and the way Marchand has fit on that line. And then you go from, you know, Brandon Montour leaves to Seth Jones, who's more of that classic physical workhorse defenseman type. And with Edmonton, there were so many questions about, you know, losing Holloway and Broberg, that they lose too much speed. Now the way the blue line's playing, the way their depth is contributing, I think you could make a pretty convincing case that these are better versions of these two teams that we're going to see match up this year.
Yeah, I certainly think so. Especially, you know, knock on wood, assuming full health, because last year, you know, Dreisaitl was kind of limping around to the finish line. Yes. This year, we weren't sure what Matthew Tkachuk was going to look like after all the time he missed. So if we get the best version of these two teams, I do think they're better than what we saw last year, especially for Edmonton. You think about that blue line now all of a sudden just having six guys who can skate freely and move the puck and get it to the forwards, and what we've seen them do against Dallas in this series, that bodes very well for them against Florida's forecheck and all the nightmares that can cause other teams. I think they actually have some workarounds for that. And then, yeah, just the guys you mentioned for the Panthers, I feel like they've made such a massive difference for their outlook during this postseason run. So, yeah, these are probably – I wouldn't have thought so 2 months ago, based on the way they were playing and what they looked like. But the versions we've seen most recently of them, I do think, are actually playing at a higher level than the ones we saw make it to Game 7 last year.
True or false? This year, Connor McDavid's just inevitable.
I mean, that's always true. I felt that way last year, too. And he wound up winning the Conn Smythe, but they wound up losing. And so Florida is just, I mean, Florida's such a good team that I don't think if they lost in another close series, it would be any sort of indictment against McDavid or him not being able to get it done. Like, we've already
that's the number
that boundary.
One. Yeah. That's the number one takeaway of these playoffs, no matter what happens. Yeah. It's just like Florida's incredible.
Yeah.
Florida is just absolutely a machine.
I was looking at this. They've played 62 playoff games the past 3 years. So they're going to get to nearly 70 if this one, if the Stanley Cup final goes the distance. And that's some heavy minutes.
You can say 69. It's all right.
Yeah, it'll be a nice total.
They're going to get to 69 if it goes to 7.
Yeah, like a guy like Forsling has played like 200 more minutes than anyone on any other team during that run. And it's just such – the mileage on that is incredible. And the margin for error as well, how small it is. I mean, we saw them go to Game 7 against the Leafs in Round 2, and that easily could have gone a different way. And for them to just keep stacking this together and then – getting better and doing it in such a dominant fashion against Carolina, I just think is so impressive.
Well, I think also, you know, you think about these kind of multi-year runs in any sport. We don't see them too often in hockey. Obviously, Tampa did it just before Florida. But I think towards the end of it, there's often this feeling of like this wily veteran team that's running on fumes a little bit. You know what I mean?
And Tampa certainly was.
Yeah, they're using like all of the veteran know-how and the dark arts to find a way to, you know, get off the mat and sneak by teams. Florida's just dominating. It's just like, no, we're better. We're at the, might not be the tail end, but we're 3 years into this and we're actually a better version than we were at the start of it, which is not something you usually see.
Yeah, when the Lightning did it in those 3 years, what, 2020 to 2022, by that third run, I was like, I have no idea how they made it this far. And then obviously, you know, they had a competitive six-game series against the Avs, but that one certainly felt inevitable and they felt like the second-best team in that series. That doesn't feel the at all the case for the Panthers. And so I think that's a really, really great point by you that it just, it's very unprecedented, especially like with all the roster turnover you see. And I think I was looking at this earlier, there's nine guys on the Panthers, I think, that were on that first version when they lost to Vegas in whatever year that was, 2023, I guess. And so that amount of roster turnover, obviously the core guys with Barkov are there, but there's been so much change along the way. And they just keep finding new ways to, with the same style, but just keep kind of adding to it and adding different dimensions and layers. And yeah, I think that rematch would be incredible. And we're almost there.
We're almost there. Don't screw it up, Dallas.
Yeah. Although the West Final has been so fun to watch.
Even though the
scores haven't been that close, that if we get a couple more games of that, I certainly won't complain.
We were talking about how the Eastern Conference Final, though, like suddenly became fun somewhere in Game 4. Like last night was sick. That was such a cool game. that Jarvis finish was incredible. And then that Barkov move on Orlov and then Robinson and then that feed and Verhaeghe, Johnny on the spotting, realizing exactly where he had. I mean, that was just gorgeous hockey.
Well, and I felt like that was period. Also just such another like feather in the cap for the Panthers, because that first period, they had nothing going.
Totally.
The crowd was going crazy. Aho scores the two goals off the rush. And you're thinking like, all right, the Hurricanes.
They also hit the post. Bobrovsky does not look sharp.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if the Hurricanes are necessarily going to all of a sudden have a chance to win this series, but like they found something here and it's going to go to six and all of a sudden there's going to be pressure on Florida. And then for them to come back with that second period surge and score those three goals in such close succession was, I mean, it's just, this is why they've been so successful, but it's also, I feel like any other team would have just been like, all right, well, tonight's not our night.
Yeah, we'll go back to Florida.
Yeah,
we'll
win
there.
Home. We're probably going to win game six. It'll be fine. Instead, they were like, nope, let's just like throw one more fastball here. And
we're going to bury you on the road. Just become their specialty now in these playoffs really in rapid succession. Give us one like non-headline item that you're curious to watch, excited to watch, that you're going to be keeping an eye on in the rematch.
Oh, man, you really put me on the spot there.
That's right. You got to face the tough questions on Canucks Talk. I'll tell you what.
I don't know. Tom, do you have anything? Buy me a couple minutes here to think on it. Because I think like the very obvious stuff in terms of like whether McDavid and Seidel are going to play together with home ice, if they're going to get Barkov against them, seeing that head-to-head, I think those are going to be the main selling points. But
So some weird ones that I'm looking forward to. Jake Walman, irrational puck moving confidence versus Florida Panthers forecheck sounds hilarious. Like, sign me up for that. And by the way, I think it's going to work. I think that's going to be an edge. I think you need to have a little bit of like reckless go for it if you're a defender playing the Florida Panthers, because they're the only place they're vulnerable is in the most dangerous area of the ice, right through the middle. And Walman's just like perfectly calibrated to pull it off, in part because of his skill set and in part because of the drawbacks of his skill set keeping both teams in the game. So that's like number one weird thing I'm excited about.
That's a great one. I'll one up you on that.
Yeah.
I love Jake Walman's irrational confidence. On the other side, though, Nico Mikola's irrational confidence, and we saw it in full force in that East final with the end-to-end rushes. Just a human that massive should not be beating everyone down the ice, going from dot to dot. And every once in a while, like sometimes he really kind of tamps it down and just plays a very conservative game. And then every once in a while, he just decides that he's going to be the most impressive offensive defenseman we've ever seen and pulls
it's
off
so good.
Such remarkable feats of athleticism. And he did that for three straight games in that East final. So if all of a sudden he's going to be doing that in this series, I'm very excited about that.
He's the Scott Niedermeyer of Lucas Pieses.
I'm just imagining the old like NBA on NBC.
I mean, he's kind of playing like he's the Cale Makar of Chris Pronger's though. Like,
the old NBA on NBC promos, but in this case it's like Walman, Mikola. It's the Stanley Cup Finals on Rogers Sportsnet.
That happened?
No.
Oh, that
used to be how they do it. It would be you know, Jordan Malone, right? And it's like, this is our version.
Total. Well,
Walman versus Mikola.
Remember, like, Crosby, Ovechkin. It's they barely play against each other.
It's not a hard match.
What? Are you making fun of me for having that take?
Yes. Okay. All right. We'll wrap things up there. As a reminder, we're off tomorrow, so tune in for Canucks Brunch from 11 to 1. We'll be back on Monday. Also, don't forget, Abby Canucks versus Texas Stars with Brandon Astle on the call at 7. You can hear it here on Sportsnet 650. And keep getting your Sportsnet 650 Jays Care 50-50 tickets now. If we get to $10,000 by Canucks Central tomorrow, we'll give away another pair of tickets for Game 2 out in Abby. JaysCareGolf.RaffleNexus.com is the URL, or you can text money to 650-650. Have a great weekend. We'll talk on Monday on Sportsnet 650.